It's Thursday, October 26th, 2017, and you're listening to Last Time on Video Games, the show about retro video games and sometimes some other stuff. You're listening to episode 204.
The camera was the monster all along.
Runtime for this episode is 55 minutes. Hello and welcome to Last Time on Video Games. Enter the podcast. My name is Jeremy.
I enjoy a good Jill sandwich. I'm Tyler.
I think they forgot the hair gel. My name is Zach.
The hair gel?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, in Resident Evil 4, Leon Kennedy is dropped into Spain with a Spanish to English dictionary and a can of hair gel.
He's got a handgun.
To save the president's daughter.
He's got a handgun and one magazine of bullets.
That's true, too.
To be fair, he's really more along the line of James Bond special forces. He's usually used to talking his way into situations.
Except for, at this point in time, Leon Kennedy has survived a zombie apocalypse once. That's his credentials, to go save the president's daughter.
Hey, at least he hasn't just photographed wars, you know.
To be fair,
Frank Wesker was sent as a photographer.
Wait, Frank Wesker?
Yes. Fusion Ha.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's a Dead Rising game I'd play, frankly.
Yeah, Frank West was sent as a, or was it, he wasn't even sent, he was a freelance photographer.
Yeah, he was just
heard
there.
Some was going down and was like, hey, helicopter dude. And that is the most legendary helicopter pilot in all of gaming, because he doesn't get shot down. He actually makes a successful landing.
You're just the one in Resident Evil.
That's true.
Well,
yeah, they
the
just
first
leave
one
your
does,
ass there.
Yeah, they come back at the end. That's spoilers for Resident Evil. You shoot flares and the helicopter comes and gets you.
Oh, wow. That's too convenient.
Wow, so that's even a military helicopter.
I mean, to be fair, there's a Metroid-style three-minute countdown going on, and you have to get to the top of the building and do a boss fight there before that happens.
Isn't that like 40 seconds worth of boss fight, though?
Yeah, it's not very much.
But you've only got a three-minute timer, so...
There is a really weird bit where at the very end that you get a rocket launcher with 41 shots, but it only takes one to finish the boss off.
Why 41?
Well, that's related to what we'll probably talk about on the when we actually get to the episode.
So, if you couldn't tell, we played Resident Evil this week.
When does Wesker go insane?
He's already insane.
Yeah, spoilers for... Also spoilers for Resident Evil, Wesker's the bad guy. He escapes.
What a twist. And then he never goes away, I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure he's still in
episode 5.
I don't think he's in Resi 2 either.
He's not in Resi 4.
No, he's not.
He doesn't have a physical presence in Resi 4. He dies in Resi 5.
To be fair, my knowledge of Wesker before having played this game came entirely from Marvel vs. Capcom.
He's a cool character.
Mine came from various other things talking about franchises and whatnot.
So speaking of franchises and whatnot, Zach, what have you been playing?
I've been playing a lot of Dokkan Battle because we're all playing that all the time. Because
I think
always.
You guys are playing it slightly more than I am.
I think so, too. We're definitely spending more money on it than you are.
That's fair. Yeah, the problem is I can't play during or around work at all because I'm busy at work.
And then, I have breaks.
Yeah, I don't. I guess I could take breaks, but...
I'm union, man.
Are you? Oh, yeah, I guess that's actually true, huh?
And also... I restore all my stamina in about a shift.
How?
I have 110 max stamina.
Oh, okay, yeah, no, that makes
He burns
sense.
All of it, and then it just replenishes after the end of the shift.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But other than Dokkan Battle, I've been playing Cuphead.
You should share your Steam library with me, because I want to play that, but I don't want to buy it right now. Mostly because I went through all the video games I've paid for and haven't played, and it's 137 video games, and I just bought two more today, so I'm trying not to buy anymore.
What did you use to find out the games that you hadn't played before? Because I've seen some tools for it.
I just went through them all.
Okay.
I went through my Steam library, my GOG library, that stack of 360 games, that crate of Wii and PS2 games, and then the games on my shelf.
I think I've played almost all the games I've bought.
To be fair, many of these I've played the first like hour or so of and then bounced off of. But how is Cuphead, besides looking really good to me?
I really, really like playing it. For a while, I was stuck on this genie boss... But I finally managed to beat him, and I'm stuck on killing this dragon, which is a little bit different because as opposed to every other sky-based boss, you're not in the little plane that you get. You're actually trying to jump from platform to platform while you're doing this.
That sounds fun.
And one of the things that I like about this game that you don't see a lot of other platforming or 2D games do is falling down a pit or falling, off screen just inflicts a single hit.
Yeah, kind of like the old Zelda games did. I guess like all Zelda games do.
There are a handful of platformers that work that way, but most follow the Mario tradition of killing you instantly.
So I was thinking of that one Mega Man boss where there's a dragon chasing you and you have to jump from platform to platform until you get to a point where it stops moving. But falling down any of those is instant death and you have to try again.
One of the levels that I guess I played was there's this like a bunch of toys and whatnot that you're going through. And the level actually has a bunch of basically switches to switch which side of this level you're playing on. You go up to the ceiling, then you hit the switch, and you go back down to the floor.
Okay.
And you need that to dodge some of the enemies that are moving across. And it's a really cool effect.
When you say switch, like, is it a thing you can just activate on command, or is it like something you have to physically navigate to and hit?
You have to navigate to it and parry against it.
Okay.
So that's one of the reasons why I've actually started getting better about the parry, is because the parry is also how you interact with the world in a lot of ways.
It seems like kind of the main mechanic of the game. I mean, I guess shooting and jumping are the main mechanics, but the unique mechanic of the game, I suppose.
Well, that's how you, like you said, that's how you interact with the world. You're jumping around and you're moving around the world, but when you have to hit the switches and whatnot, you're using that parry.
As opposed to shooting them, because a lot of games work on the, like, just hit it with your attack mechanic.
Well, this is one of those games where if you're not shooting, you're either completed the level or you're dead.
So is it not auto-shoot, then?
You hold the shoot.
Okay.
I went in and I had to change one of the key bindings because shoot defaults on the 360 controller to X.
Okay.
Which is not bad.
Yeah, like A and X is my preferred platformer setup using the 360
but
controller.
A is jump and Y is dash.
I would put dash on a
right,
trigger
yeah,
is
right
what I would
button,
do.
Maybe.
So I put, well, right button is actually stand still and mess with angles for your eight-dimensional shoot or your eight-way shooting.
Oh.
So I actually remapped shoot to the right trigger.
Okay.
Because that's more comfortable for me.
Rogue Legacy and whatchamacallit, that other game that's like Rogue Legacy, 20XEX, both have dash on right trigger by default. And I don't know. I like it there. Partially, though, I think that's because I played a lot of Mega Man X on a PlayStation, and it was mapped to, like, R2. So
that'd be annoying to me. That's why I like putting shoot there and having the other buttons.
It's mostly so that I can jump and shoot and dash all at the same time.
Well, yeah, that's why I like having them on the A and the Y button, is because I'm not going to be sitting there messing with that a lot.
Yeah, I feel like I like dash to be on a shoulder button mostly because I don't accidentally hit shoulder buttons, whereas I will sometimes fat finger the buttons.
I've never had that problem, but I can see that being an issue for some people. I started playing Doom again.
I saw that.
Because that's generally what I do when I'm just kind of chilling out.
Doom, 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 doom.
Is that your new Halo, or that's the game you just do runs of if you want to play a video game?
Kinda, yeah.
Kind of, because you kind of have games like that too, Jeremy.
Not
right?
At the moment, but yes. Generally, I will pick up a Star Fox 64 or a Mega Man X, and it will be my sort of default state.
See, the difference is I tend to play games that are like 8 to 10 hours long. When you guys have one of these like default games that are like 2 hours.
I mean, I don't have default games like this. But what I have gone to recently is if I want to play a game and I don't have anything in particular I want to play, I'll either play Smash or Splatoon. But those are like
competitive games with rounds. Yeah.
It used to be like Rogue Legacy and Spelunky. What you would generally default to.
I mean, I still play Spelunky occasionally. Like, it's pretty short games, or I guess pretty short-lived games.
Yeah, I would say roguelikes are also kind of similar to competitive games in that they have rounds.
True. I'm also playing a lot of League.
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like League is your general go-to, though.
It is. I prefer playing it with friends, and as of late, I haven't had as many friends online to play with. So, that's...
I have a solution for that. Homunculi.
What else, Zach?
I picked up The Sims 3 again, because I needed a different default, or just something that I wasn't really needing to pay attention to, because I wanted to set something running, basically, in the background while I was messing with Dokkan Battle for reasons.
No, I get that. I mean, you got some downtime, right? Like, in between rounds of Dokkan. Actually, like, if I'm in between rounds of Splatoon or something, I will play that. But I usually have, like, two games going on, and provided Alex isn't around, also a video or two.
My Blu-ray player is pretty much constantly on. I need to, actually watch some of the Blu-rays I own. I've been steadily adding more and more, and,
So instead of video games you don't play, you have Blu-rays you don't watch.
Yeah. Has there been anything else? I was going to try the Bleach phone game, but...
Brave
then,
Souls?
Yeah.
You don't need another Dokkan Battle in your life?
Well, so when you're waiting for your stamina to recharge in one, you can
now
play the
I
other.
Remember
Look,
what
I did download Naruto Ninja Blazing.
I played very little of it, but so I did download it.
The question is, which one holds up better? Because, man, or maybe not holds up, but like which one has mechanics that work together better?
So that's kind of why I want to get the Bleach one and try it. Because number one, I like Bleach. I like this kind of thing I've found.
Getsuka Tenshou!
And they've got a lot of cool characters. I don't know how many of them I'm going to get to the park and be like, you must be from when this series went to But I've actually played a lot of another phone game, and I kept forgetting about it. It's called Goddess Kiss, and it is as dumb as it sounds, for one thing.
I mean, I'm not sure. That doesn't sound dumb to me. It sounds like I have no idea what it is.
See, it sounds very softcore to me. I don't even sure what softcore what. Just it sounds very softcore.
It is a very anime game, but the reason why I picked it up is because it was on a bunch of those top phone game lists and stuff like that. Because from way back when I was looking for something to play while Dokkan Battle was under maintenance, it was on a lot of those lists that I came across. And it's a mech game.
Okay, that's not where I was expecting that to go.
Neither was I, but you have all your pilots, and they all have mechs. And so your pilots level up, and then you also upgrade their mechs.
So can you swap pilots between mechs?
No.
Or are they like bound to each other?
They're specific.
Okay. Actually, it's kind of like a traditional JRPG, where like your character has intrinsic traits and also their equipment.
Yeah, so all of them have like special abilities and things that special ultimate attacks and whatnot. But the thing that really gets me is it feels very much like Ogre Battle 64. Your positioning, your character's positioning matters a lot. Like you have, I've got a couple of characters where they have just their basic attacks will hit everybody in a line. But like one of them will hit everybody directly across, and then the other one will hit everybody that is perpendicular.
Zach, not to interrupt, how much do you know about the Mega Man Battle Network games?
They exist.
When we play them for the podcast, you should actually play them, because I genuinely think you will really like them.
Yeah, if you can get past the first, like,
The problem is they're very 2000s JRPG, where you're like, when is this plot going to end and let me play a video game?
We'll see.
Okay, anyway, go on.
I really liked the first one.
But this one, like I said, since the positioning matters a lot, I actually really like tinkering with it and saying, okay, where can I reposition these characters? Because they also start off and they only will attack people directly across from them on like the battlefield. So that's where these characters that have these AoE effects just as part of their basic abilities come into play. I'm not going to sit here and say, this is one of the greatest things I've ever played. Honestly, the gameplay is a little shallow and it really does feel very, very heavily
on the phone game side?
On the pay us money.
Ah,
I mean, okay. So does Dokkan Battle, to be fair.
I don't know why Dokkan doesn't feel quite as bad about it, but it is pretty
bad. I mean, I have successfully avoided giving them any money so far.
The game itself is kind of fun. Like I said, messing with it and finding the different positionings and stuff is rewarding. Like, I feel good whenever I have set it up and, like, okay, this is going to work and winning levels. But the problem is it really does, the part where they really start to feel like, hey, pay us money is the first couple of levels were fairly simple. I leveled up at the right rate to get all my characters to a point where I could actually beat the bosses and whatnot and we're fine. But then last couple of levels, it's like, okay, I really got to start grinding this now. And that's kind of annoying. But I've been kind of enjoying the game. It's not great, but I find it fun. And it's something that's kind of a fun diversion when I've burned all my stamina in Dokkan Battle. And I'm like,
it'll
okay.
always be your second place.
Yeah, and it's like, okay, time to do something else. But, well, I mean, we're going to see. Because like I said, I initially downloaded the Bleach one. Then I had to delete it.
Why is that?
I don't think I had to, but today I was getting dinner. And Dokkan Battle wouldn't launch. It kept crashing. But I think I figured out what the problem was. I had my Wi-Fi just kind of turned on.
And you were picking up McDonald's?
And it was hooking up to McDonald's, and Dokkan needs a better connection to load its stuff, and so it just kept crashing because it didn't have the proper hookup. Because as soon as I tried removing Bleach, because that was the last thing I'd put on it. I closed everything, didn't load. So I closed Bleach, still didn't load. Restarted the phone, didn't load, then realized, hey, I'm hooked up to McDonald's Wi-Fi for some reason. So I turned off my Wi-Fi and tried loading it again, fired right up. It's like, oh, that was the problem.
I feel like it's a little sad if your mobile data network is more consistent than your wireless.
I think it's something to do with the wireless at McDonald's specifically.
Yeah, works, no, I'm sure it is.
But it works perfectly fine at my house, where my phone also just automatically hooks up to my Wi-Fi.
And then also on McDonald's, you have to go through like
a captive portal thing.
Yeah, so that might also be that.
Yeah, no, and that's definitely a problem. I signed into a Village Inn network once, and now it signs into all of them because they all have the same name. Well, tries to, and then I'm like, why is my internet not working? It's because I'm sitting there on a network I can't actually get internet access through.
So I think it's just the problem of it throttled it down so badly because it's like, hey, pay for our Wi-Fi or get our Wi-Fi password or anything like that. And I'm just like...
Anything else, Zach?
Like I said, League, and I would still really recommend Doom. I kind of wish you didn't already own it.
Because then I might play it?
No, I kind of wish you didn't already own it, because then in theory you might pick it up for the Switch and see if there's any differences.
I might still pick it up for the Switch. I'm not as adamant about this as a lot of other Switch users, but whenever a video game comes out not on the Switch, it's like, what's even the point?
Why?
Because the Switch, I can just pick it up and play it wherever I go. It is very convenient. The Switch is just a very nice console. Like, the console experience for it is very nice. It's hard to explain.
I'll believe you, but those controllers look like absolute ass.
Well, I use a Pro controller, which is just a 360 controller.
Okay.
Yeah, it's Pro.
But the main reason is they're launching that. One of the things that I saw kind of said that the game is running at 30 FPS, which doesn't make a whole lot of difference because you can't tell normally, but I want to see how things got changed around. Or whether there are any other things
they had to do.
If things did change at any frame from the 60 FPS that they're running on the PlayStation 4, 1, and PC to the 30 FPS. And like I said, that's what I saw. I don't know if it actually is running at 30 FPS on the Switch.
I feel like it's the sort of thing you, a person who's played Doom 2016 four times, would notice, but anyone who had never played it before wouldn't, even if there were things.
I mean, that's fair. Like I said, I'm just genuinely curious. Honestly, that tiny little thing doesn't seem like it would have the power, but that's also the genius of technology.
Yeah, what? I mean, theoretically, your phone could run at 60 FPS.
Well, right? It's one of those things that always fascinates me and always makes me kind of chuckle, is that the power of our phones that we're just walking around with in our pocket have more processing capability than the computers we use to get to the moon.
Yeah, we have supercomputers. So all of us. It's great.
So speaking of the miracles of technology, I was in GameStop today because Nintendo emailed me and they were like, hey, do you want that cool new legendary Pokemon? You have to go to a GameStop and get a card. And I was like, well, I have to go to Walmart today anyway. I will go to GameStop and I will get some cards. So I was in GameStop, and also I didn't just want to be like, give me free cards. So I'm like, what is some merchandise I can purchase? And they had Super NES minis just like in a stack there. And
what?
I was like, the guy was like, I don't know. Every other day we've got them. We've had a horde of people at the door in the morning, but no one showed up today. So here they are. And I was like, I will take one of these. And I know it's called Mini, and I've seen them in reviews, but never next to a copy of 50 Cent Blood on the Sand. So I did not realize how small they are.
That is a weird point of comparison.
Oh, it's what Chris Sims, the first thing he ever got sent as a review copy was a copy of 50 Cent Blood on the Sand. So whenever he received anything, he would show it next to a copy of that for scale, which is also works because everybody knows what a game or DVD case, like how big that is.
Okay.
I mean, they are pretty small, right?
Have you seen them?
Not in person.
Okay. How many DSs big would you imagine they are?
I assume they're about 2.5. Like, original DSs.
They're like 2, aren't they?
Thankfully, Jeremy has one. Wow. Okay.
Wait, that's... Like,
they're like one kind of distorted in a different...
They're like an NES cartridge and a half, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't even think they're an NES cartridge and a half. I think this is just an NES cart. I mean, it's a
bit
thicker.
The part where it bubbles up is...
It's a bit thicker, but geez.
Yeah.
Every time I saw somebody holding one, they must have smaller hands than I do, because every time I saw them, it was like, you know, holding them just, hey, look.
So it's got like, two ports.
That must be pretty big.
I assume that's an HDMI and a power?
Yes.
Okay.
HDMI and mini USB, actually, but the mini USB just goes
Where do the controllers plug in?
They are concealed.
Oh, okay. So they're just behind the original ports.
Yeah.
Huh, that's pretty sweet. How much were those running right now?
It was under $80.
That's pretty sweet.
I think they're $69.99.
If I didn't already own most of those games on Virtual Console, I might want to pick one up.
I know when they first came out, I sent you guys a text that said, hey, this is out.
Yeah, I knew because I really wanted one, but I wasn't expecting to find one, and I didn't want to search like I did for the Switch.
And
but
you just stumbled across it?
Yeah, one fell into my lap, and I was like, yes, I will take that. If no other reason than for the podcast.
From what I heard, is initially like they we're just going to do a limited run like they did with the NES Mini. But then, you know, Scalp were getting at them a lot. And then just like a couple of weeks before they were set to release, Nintendo said, hey, we're actually releasing a whole bunch more of these things than we initially had said we were. And so all the scalpers have already had, you know, pre-ordered and bought all these things just to kind of give them the finger. It's like, hey, screw you guys.
Yeah, I'm almost disappointed with how small it is. I know that sounds ridiculous.
I can actually kind of understand that, because one of the things that I think a lot of people who would be getting something like that would like is the effect of having it next to the TV.
Like a display piece?
Yeah, and it being so tiny, it really doesn't display well.
This but you can put it with all your other games.
It fits on my Wii U next to the hard drive, and that's strange. But for me, I've said I'd never had a Super Nintendo, and honestly, part of the appeal for me of this is kind of fixing that, and it doesn't feel like one. I mean, a lot of it is also I just want to play Star Fox 2 and Yoshi Island on as close to original hardware as you can get.
Yoshi's Island.
I just realized one of the problems I'd have with something like that is that it's got no room to put my figures on. Because, I mean, you haven't been to my place in a while. I have all of my figures on this table, and most of them are on top of my consoles.
I feel like that was the case the last time I was at your house.
I have more. Have you actually gotten a chance to play anything off of that yet,
no,
Jeremy?
No, I bought it today, and I literally just took it out of the box. I didn't even hook it up.
And then showed it to us, obviously.
Yes. Although, like, I was talking about making a list of games. Some of them were games we played for the podcast, and I wanted to go back and finish. Almost all of those are on the Super Nintendo. Secret of Mana's on there, Mario RPG, and I am genuinely excited. I've never played the original Star Fox before, and I want to check out Star Fox 2.
It's a game.
Yeah, I know.
I've heard Star Fox 2 did a lot of interesting things, but they never released it because of the aforementioned reasons.
So is Mega Man X on there?
Yeah.
Because it feels like it has to be on there. Super Metroid, I'm assuming.
Super Metroid's on there. It's all Kill and No Filler and Contra 3.
And Contra 3.
But Contra 3 is the worst game on that console, and it's like the midpoint of our list. So
it's actually like, I feel like 20 above our midpoint now.
It's like 2 or 3 above our midpoint.
That's like 20, right?
Other than that, just Dokkan Battle. I saw Happy Death Day with Tyler yesterday to celebrate Spookalloween.
So I have to say I was disappointed in that movie because he sold me on a schlocky horror film that I can make fun of, and it was surprisingly clever and witty.
Yeah,
and
yeah, it was kind of the worst case scenario for that movie, which was it was actually pretty good.
Oh, it was?
Yeah, it was actually. Like I give it a solid 8 out of 10. I don't know that it's necessarily worth going to see in theaters, but it's maybe worth like watching when it is available in other formats.
So did the mythical Jason go with you guys too?
Yeah, he did.
Okay.
He got a bowl of popcorn, and I was really jealous because I can't really eat popcorn anymore.
It was a surprisingly good movie. I actually would recommend you go see it. It is probably still in theaters, and it is a better movie, but only by a little bit. It's not a more fun movie.
Yeah, no, this was a very fun movie as well.
It took me a second to realize he was talking about the movie.
That is the problem with Stephen King's It the Movie by Stephen King, is that nobody knows when you're talking about Stephen King's It the Movie by Stephen King, unless you call it that.
I thought you were just going with it's still in theaters as in the Happy Death Day for when this goes live.
It should be. I haven't seen Jigsaw because it's not out yet, but I'm sure it's better than Jigsaw.
Yeah, man, we saw trailers for that. I'm like, really? They're still doing this?
Well, they're doing it again. It's been like 10 years.
Okay.
But
I assume
this, like, even the trailer, it just keeps going on and on. And they're so I'm like, well, at least that's the worst part of this trailer. Nope. You're going to top yourself? Okay.
I don't understand the point of torture porn movies. Like, I just don't get it.
I mean, it's hard to explain. Really, the appeal, the first Saw is genuinely good and has very little torture in it. The second and third Saw kind of suck, but then after that, it's just like watching how hard they try to keep going with it is entertaining.
It's like watching the train wreck.
Yeah, it is exactly that. And like they have this lore that they keep adding to and are stuck with more and more every movie. And it's fun to see them like wiggle with that. And it's also fun that they keep getting more and more cops assigned to the Jigsaw case trying to deal with it.
At some point, you got like 40 people from across different jurisdictions.
At one point, the FBI shows up and they're like, okay, this is a federal case now.
How many jurisdictions are in on this? We just created another department. It's called the Jigsaw Department. It's over there off of Bleecker. They deal with just all Jigsaw-related killings in the country. Like, that's just, they're like the 51st department.
Yeah, between Jigsaw himself and all the copycat killers, like, you know, they got their hands full.
We need more people. We have like 3 normal cops now. Like, we have no more people to send you.
So what have you been doing besides watching Happy Death Day, Tyler?
Picking back up on Zach's anime trend earlier, one of my coworkers is a pretty big anime fanatic. and he's been trying to get me to, like, watch a lot of things. I've been resisting.
What things?
Lots of things. He also wants me to watch Kill la Kill. So
Kill la Kill is fantastic. You would like it. I agree with this person.
Well, my new coworker has, like, a list of things she wants me to watch, and, like, both of them have a bunch of manga they want me to read. I'm like, okay, gee. So I finally gave in to one of them. He's been trying to get me to read or watch No Game, No Life for a long time.
I've heard decent things about that one.
So he gave me the light novel of No Game, No Life, because I said I would be more likely to consume that than actually watching the anime. I've got that in my bag. I haven't actually consumed it yet, but soon.
Have you been playing anything?
Nothing of any particular note. I played, obviously, some more Spelunky and some more Splatoon, surprising everyone. I've been playing mostly, like, Renovate My Basement.
Fun game.
Yeah.
Rough game, though.
It is. It takes an unfortunate amount of time. I've also been playing, like, Workout again now that all my injuries are healed, and that takes time. That's fun. You know, I have been playing something, and I can't for the life of me remember what the heck it is. I played a lot of Resident Evil. Maybe nothing
else.
Why,
I don't know, but...
So speaking of Resident Evil, the assignment this week, Resident Evil for PlayStation. Although Zach and I both played the HD Steam version, and Tyler as well, right?
Yeah, I tried to play the PlayStation version, but I couldn't get a copy from Ed in time, so I ended up playing the Steam
version.
Although,
I think we got to go back a step for a second.
And mention that the HD remake is actually an HD remake of the GameCube remake.
I didn't know that. I was going to say, I think we mispronounced it. I don't think it's Resident Evil. It's Resident Evil.
Are you sure it's not Biohazard?
Of course not. We're American, damn it.
I don't know. I like Biohazard better.
I do love that Biohazard 7's subtitle is Resident Evil and Resident Evil's subtitle is Biohazard.
I like how they did that because it kind of brought both of their things, make it easy for both sides to find it.
And now they're just going to call it that, or like they're just going to do that forever, I hope.
Well, on Steam, it kind of already was doing that.
Was it?
If you look at all the Steam listings for Resident Evil...
It's like Resident Evil 2 slash Biohazard 2?
Yeah, like okay. On the on this one, it was Resident Evil slash Biohazard.
I don't know. I feel like Biohazard fits more in line with the themes of the game.
The first game, you can see where they got it, right? Because you're investigating this mansion.
Yeah, and there's like a Biohazard. But oh, you mean Resident Evil.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, but that makes sense.
Initially,
but the second and third and fourth game, like the fourth game especially, there are many residences here. None of them seem especially evil. There is this castle I have to deal with.
And also Napoleon.
Evil. We can't get into evil Midget Napoleon. We'll be here all day without talking about Resident Evil.
Midget Napoleon.
Yes.
He's such a great character.
Isn't that just a confirmation?
To be fair, Napoleon was not actually short. It was propaganda spread by his enemies.
I thought he was like 5 foot. Like, he wasn't tall, but he wasn't
five,
like a midget.
He was 5'7 in French units, which were actually slightly longer than English units.
So he was short.
No, he was about average height.
So Resident Evil is not the first survival horror game, but it is the game that kind of coined the term.
It is also the big one.
It, like, really, I guess, solidified a lot of the tropes.
When you're making a quote-unquote survival horror game, which I don't think is a real genre, by the way, but I don't want to have that discussion here, really what you're doing is aping Resident Evil. Or you're taking that as your starting point, right?
I was about to say something about how that's not entirely true and point to Dead Space, and then went, no, that's Dead Space is pretty much right on the ball with that.
I was like, did you guys ever play Run Like Hell? Because I didn't. And
no, I didn't. That was based off of the Thing, though, if I remember right.
Really? I didn't know that.
If I remember right, Run Like Hell is based off The Thing.
The Thing is one of my favorite sci-fi horror concepts, so.
The Thing video game is surprisingly good.
I didn't know it existed.
It's like a PS2 Xbox game.
Huh.
The Thing level in the Sarah cleanup detail is where I blew Tyler up.
That's also one of my favorite levels, although that's probably just because I like The Thing. Anyway, sorry, I didn't mean to distract from Resident Evil.
So Resident Evil starts with a long cutscene. The original version, they actually hired actresses. Well, I say actresses. They hired people.
They hired actors and actresses.
I would call them people. You know how some commercials are like real people, not actors? These were real people. There's some voiceover. They explained that there was this mansion and some went down there. So they sent
Or Bravo team got lost.
No, that's after that.
Oh,
because
okay.
Some went down, they sent Bravo team.
A group of 10 people were eating people in the streets. So we sent Bravo team to investigate. We're stars.
But Bravo team sucks. So they all got blowed up or something. No one's heard from them. So now we're going. Because, you know, if you send one team in, you just keep sending more teams in until...
Well, I mean, it makes a certain amount of sense. You send in a team to investigate what happened to the other team. But the difference is you send in that first team. Then if you don't hear from them, you send in the second team. in full riot gear with assault rifles and combat shotguns.
Jill Valentine, because she's a member of STARS.
And also,
So is Chris Redfield.
But that's her winning quote in Marvel vs. Capcom is, I'm a member of STARS.
And also Albert Wesker, the guy's so cool he wears sunglasses indoors at night and still
in
is
a
the
haunted
best shot.
House.
Spoilers, Wesker is the bad guy. So once you get through the cutscene, you select your character, which is going to be either Jill or Chris. Jill, obviously, because she's a girl and therefore interesting. Chris is every generic white dude in a video game. It's 1996, not 2017. So imagine Chris Redfield from Resi 6 without those giant muscles that can punch boulders.
He actually got those in Resi 5.
Fair enough. But he punches the boulder in 6, right? Am I wrong?
No, that's in 5.
Okay. Does he punch a boulder?
He does.
Yeah, you know that scene in Yu-Gi-Oh! Abridged where they punch the boulder?
Yeah.
It's that, but it's a real boulder.
Yeah, like, he is punching a boulder and all that because he's fighting Wesker in a volcano. And yet somehow that game is better than this one. That game's actually pretty fun.
I only played Resident Evil 4 until I played this, and, like, you know, that's my baseline for, like, that's kind of grounded in reality-ish. There's no boulder punching.
There are those, like, ogres, though, and when you drop into a pit of lava...
Yeah, but you do it by shooting them repeatedly. You're not punching them.
The way it's going is I can kind of understand. The punching of the boulder is not quite, like, he doesn't just stand there and punch the boulder. He's trying to push it. Like, I can kind of see that as
part
of throwing your weight against it.
Look, 6 was where it got too ridiculous for anybody, and they had to recalibrate with 7. But we digress. Once you get through the cutscene, if you're Chris, you get separated from everyone else. Jill gets to hang out with a bunch of people who are bad at exposition.
But did they change that then? Because in the version that you and I played, you're there, but it's you, Jill, and Wesker. Barry goes missing.
Oh.
If you're playing as Chris.
I didn't actually play as Chris. I saw a Let's Play, and I thought he was alone. Because if you play as Jill, Chris gets separated.
Yeah, I know. That's what threw me off.
Okay, but, then I'm wrong.
Then you immediately go looking, because, you know, one of the greatest plays. All right, you guys stay here as I go investigate this mansion because I apparently dropped my gun and I don't have it. I'm going to go investigate alone.
The plot is actually slightly different depending on which one you play.
I knew that, and I thought Chris, because he gets separated from Jill, I thought they kept that.
Nope.
He's still investigating alone, and they're separated from the rest of the group, but...
For different reasons.
So, in addition to Jill being a more interesting character, there is actually game impact based on which character you play. The story changes slightly. Also, Jill has 2 more inventory spaces and gets lockpicks, so she doesn't have to find as many keys. Whereas Chris gets a lighter, so he only has to find kerosene to burn zombies. He doesn't also need to find a lighter.
He's also better at shooting things.
Yes. Also, Chris has a higher chance of getting a headshot on a zombie.
But he doesn't start with a gun, where Jill does.
That's because she's a member of STARS.
Apparently, she didn't drop hers.
Also, Barry is a more helpful sidekick. Like, there's the Jill sandwich scene where there's a shotgun that's, like, on some weighted things, and if you take the shotgun, the ceiling will come down to crush you. You can later in the game get a broken shotgun that you can switch it out with, and that disables the trap. And if you're Chris, that's how you have to do it. But if you're Jill, Barry will just save you if you activate the trap.
Which is very convenient of him.
Yeah, Jill is not a great character in this game, despite what I said. She gets herself in all sorts of damsel in distress situations she needs to be saved from, mostly by Barry. She has one really badass moment where she gets a magnum away from Barry when she thinks he's betrayed her, but that's kind of it.
Yeah, because when you first encounter the very first zombie, the solution is run back to Barry and get him to shoot it.
You can actually shoot it to death, but then it will still come back to life when you go back to Barry, and he will have to deal with it.
Wow, that's really annoying.
Yes,
considering
it was.
You have limited ammo in this.
And limited saves.
So yeah, let's talk about a lot of the weird new inventive stuff this game does, because I don't think it holds up very well, and I think lots of these ideas are either bad or were poorly executed. But I really admire this game for trying them all, because I genuinely think they were all worth trying, even if it turns out, no, they're not very good. The main thing this game did was it enhanced its graphic ability by pre-rendering all the backgrounds, so it looks way better than any PlayStation game. The problem with that is you kind of have to have fixed camera angles, because you can't do that with a rotating camera.
Because then
they're
not pre-rendered.
Which makes it a real pain in the ass to not only navigate the world, but also deal with the hazards, such as zombies.
Yeah, I like it from an idea perspective, and I really like if they had to do this, that they tried to make a horror game, because a lot of the shots look like horror movie shots, and a lot of the cuts work pretty well, but it's really annoying to be firing at a zombie, and even though you have auto-aim and you know you're hitting, you can't see that you're hitting, so it doesn't feel right.
Well, it's a different thing for me because it feels like a smash up between what should be an action game because you have highly skilled individuals or theoretically highly skilled or trained individuals, and then you have this horror game and your people are actually incredibly incompetent.
Let's talk about
really pisses me off.
Let's talk about ludonarrative dissonance in a moment, because I agree this game has it in spades, but I think the problem with this game is at its core, like I said, I don't think survival horror is a real genre. This is an adventure game in the style of Monkey Island.
The only difference is that the hook, instead of being humor or something, the hook is there are zombies.
And it creates this really cool mansion with all these creative puzzles and death traps for you to adventure game your way through. But also you have this gun and you're supposed to be these military guys. And it does create this like clash. I have this real trouble getting invested in this game because all the characters are dumb and incompetent in a way that would make horror movie characters go, "Why are you so dumb?"
Yeah, that's like I alluded to earlier, when you're Chris, you're like, "I heard something. I'm going to go check it out alone." And I'm like, I'm sitting there as me, Zach, going, "What? Why? Like, and there are three of you. You don't know what's here. You're already a man down, or you're two men down because one guy got killed outside." Everybody go. And apparently the only guy who is smart enough to bring a gun bigger than a handgun is the guy that got eaten.
Yeah, and if you're Jill, every 5 minutes you meet up with Barry and he's like, "Let's split up now, Jill." "Why? Why, Barry?" He's like, "Because the programmers didn't want to program AI of me following you the entire game, just the last 5 minutes."
Because friendly AI is hard.
It is.
It's just really obnoxious.
I actually kind of wonder if that would have worked better if instead of like making it an action-ish thing, if they did it kind of like the Telltale games, also with adventure games stringing the choices together.
I've also seen a thing where it's like, the way to fix Resident Evil is make your character someone who's wheelchair-bound. That explains the crappy controls, that makes you honestly helpless. You can still get and fire a gun for little moments of power.
That would actually be a really interesting concept.
It's an interesting idea, but
like Zach said earlier, you're supposed to be this elite military team, and you just feel like a gaggle of dumbasses. My favorite example of this is there's a part where Jill thinks Barry has betrayed her because he kind of has. It's kind of complicated. She kind of gets the jump on him and gets his gun away from him. And then this zombie comes and you have the choice. And she points the gun at him. He's like, "Okay, start talking." And then the zombie comes and you have the choice to either give his gun back to him or not. But if you give his gun back to him and he doesn't betray you, you fight the boss. You cannot follow up and say, "Okay, so what's going on?" You then just continue advancing forward with this guy. Well, he has his gun.
And isn't his gun one of the most powerful guns in the game?
It's a Magnum, so.
Yes.
It's not as powerful as either character's unique weapon. Jill gets a grenade launcher and Chris gets a flamethrower.
I like Chris's special weapon from Resident Evil 5 more.
What is that?
It's a Gatling gun.
So the camera in this game is bad. The narrative makes it really hard to get invested in. But I think the main problem with the game is its core game loop isn't very good. Which is, as Zach alluded to earlier, you have very limited ammo, so you actually want to avoid monsters when you can. But since the controls are kind of awkward, that makes it difficult. But also, even when you're successful at it, it's not really fun to just walk by zombies and go through the doors behind them. It feels more like you're cheating than like you're getting through the encounters.
Because you're not like running through it and like barely barreling through the door.
Well, and the hallways are fairly small. So
it's hard to do.
Squeaking by them is hard to do without taking a hit, and it's unsatisfying to do. It's not satisfying in the way, like, if you're playing, for example, Dead Rising, and you want to get someplace on time so you don't want to fight all the zombies in the way. So you're just barreling through all of them trying to get there on time.
Yeah, and I feel like improvised weapons or something to knock them over temporarily would be really nice.
Well, the knife not being total garbage would be a start.
Yeah. So, the knife that they give you as like a Counter-Strike knife is garbage, but the one mechanic I actually really do like is they give you these daggers, and if you get grabbed by a zombie from the front, you can stab them with a dagger, which is kind of a get-out-of-jail-free card, and that is kind of a satisfying way to get by them. It doesn't kill them, but it takes them out of action for a few moments. I actually kind of wish they just had those instead of health, because the fact that you can find these knives and you can heal up also is at odds with the survival horror, because it's more about your resources running out than you, like, getting caught in a dangerous situation.
I didn't like the daggers, actually, because that felt like it should have been a mechanic that was just intrinsic to what I was doing, because I've already got a knife. Yeah. Why do I need to have these expendable knives, too?
I mean, I can see that as well, because that would mean, like, if you tried to slip by a zombie and you get caught, but you stab them and you get by. I mean, I don't want to say they needed quick time events, because those are overplayed, but that sort of thing could work well as a mechanic, and then it would feel like you were actually squeaking by and not just kind of trying to lumber past these zombies.
When this came out, the QuickTime events weren't played out, though.
Yeah, that's true. But also, they weren't really an idea yet. So, but that's the sort of thing. This game needs to make getting past zombies more fun. Because also, it encourages that in that if you kill a zombie, it will come back later more powerful, unless you have the kerosene and the lighter and you burn the corpse. Which is a cool mechanic. It does make these things scary, because you can only deal with them temporarily unless you use limited resources, like kerosene. And that adds a tactical element of which zombies do I want to burn, because I have to go through this place over and over again.
Oh. I found it annoying, not scary. I thought I just had to keep beating on them until I stayed down.
Yeah, but that's the problem, is, like, that's the intent, and that's a cool intent. But because the, like, dealing with the zombies in the moment isn't fun, it just gets frustrating.
Or tedious.
And also the fact that you have limited inventory space, I don't begrudge the game for that, but having an adventure game where you, like, can only carry so many keys, and you have to choose between keys and guns, just, it doesn't play very well, in my opinion. I like the idea, especially if you're going to have healing items in this game, you need to only be able to carry a limited amount of them, but I don't like the way that you're choosing between guns and ammo and necessary puzzle components. To be fair, this predates Halo, and I think like a two-gun system where you can only have a handgun and maybe one big gun would help solve this a lot, especially if they were outside your inventory. And I really like the way inventory works in Resident Evil 4 when you're juggling that grid. So I think there is a happy medium somewhere.
4 is the best one, because I like 5, as I already alluded to, but 5 also has the problem of when you're carrying armor, it takes up an inventory slot, but it also expands your inventory. So you're carrying armor in a pocket of your armor.
Obviously.
As Yahtzee put it.
Like I said, I really like all the ideas in this game. I can see how they're supposed to play together. And I think it's a cool prototype on paper that just doesn't come together well.
I think one of the things that we kind of alluded to but missed so far is you have limited saves on this one.
Oh yeah, we should talk about that, which is another idea I like. You have to find these ink ribbons in order to save. This also is a game that kind of has safe rooms. It has rooms that have like chests for you to put your excess inventory in, and those rooms typically have typewriters in them, which is what you need to save on. And I really like the idea of safe rooms in horror games, because it's a breath of relief when you find one. But the fact that you only have limited saves means you don't want to save, and that makes dying more frustrating.
It kind of like introduces a push your luck mechanic without really any reward for pushing your luck.
See, I like the mechanic. I like the idea for a second run challenge mode. Not as a base mechanic. Like, you play through again and a bunch of the options of second playthrough challenges pop up. Like, limited saves would be one of those kind of things. Because, like, for example, one of the hardest difficulties for the new Doom is, like, Ultra Nightmare. And in Ultra Nightmare, it's one death back to the beginning.
It is Iron Man. Hardcore mode? That sounds awesome.
Yeah, and there's one of them that's Iron Man, no quitting.
So you have to play in one setting.
You got to be all the way through, and that's the hardest difficulty in the game. One death, and you're done. And it's on the hardest difficulty. It's not like normal difficulty and one screw up. It's, nope, got to do the whole thing in one try.
I think that's very different from the limited saves in Resident Evil, though, because you're going for a different thing. In an action game, that's about proving your skill. That's about, I can do this game without messing up. Whereas in this, what they're trying to do is create more tension of, oh, I haven't saved in a long time. If I die here, it'll be really bad for me.
I'll be a Jill sandwich.
There's this great article by Seamus Young I might try to find and link, where he says dying in a horror game is the least scary thing that can happen because it's a release of tension. When you die in a horror game, you don't get scared, you get frustrated. You're scared when you're about to die and you might lose the save progress. But actually dying just sucks, especially if you've lost a lot of progress on a save that will make you give the game up. And this game is not afraid to kill you, but I think that's actually to its detriment. Being about to die is always scarier than actually dying.
Yeah, I mean, I've played a lot of games. Like in Left 4 Dead, one of the games that me, Tyler, and Kevin were playing at one point, we were running as, like, just on the brink. Everybody was almost dead. We managed to win the level with everybody almost being dead, but nobody was dead. And that was really, really tense because it was a matter of, will we get through this? But I've also played, for example, Dead Space, and I was almost never in danger of actually dying except if I failed one of the stupid basic QuickTime events.
Survival horror.
Which is just like, when you die, it's frustrating, but when you're about to die, it's tense and entertaining. And then if you die and lose like 4 hours or even an hour worth of progress, it's really, really, really annoying, especially when it doesn't feel like it's your fault. Because I've played games where you die and you lose, you know, an hour and a half, 2 hours worth of progress. And when it's your fault, you're just sitting there like, I really should have fixed that. Like when I first played through Persona 5, I died and I lost like 2 hours worth of progress. And I'm sitting there going, yeah, that one's on me. I should have gone back before then.
And I feel where Resident Evil ultimately fails is in scaring you in those moments. The zombies come off as annoying bullet sponges instead of scary things you have to deal with. And that's too bad. One more point I want to talk about Resident Evil, and this is something I do think it does well, is the way bosses work. Because they have this very adventure game feel, where almost all of them have a way that you can deal with them by helping another character, and then they'll help you through the boss fight, so you don't really have to fight them and waste your ammo. For example, the first one is this giant snake, and you can meet someone on the Bravo team who was poisoned by the snake, and if you find them an antidote, they will show up when you're fighting the snake to get revenge on it and do most of the damage you need to it. There's the bit with Barry I talked about earlier, where if you give him back his gun, he will help you with that boss fight. And then in the final one, you can save Barry and Chris, and if you've done that, they will help you in that boss fight. So those are all actually cool mechanics that add a dynamic element to this. This is also a game with multiple endings because you can save different characters, and I think that's kind of cool and ambitious.
Yeah, I mean, different endings are always an entertaining thing because it makes people want to replay them to find all of them. But
on the other, like, I don't actually know what any of the endings are. I didn't watch any of them.
Thing is, they don't vary much, but, like, just enough that it's cool that the game acknowledged you let Chris die or you saved him or whatever.
Okay, so it's more like an acknowledgement of all the tasks you perform. Like, if you ever get around to playing West of Loathing, like, you get additional cutscenes for each of the subquests you completed. None of them really, like, are a cohesive thing. It's just, like, you know, that little clip.
It's kind of like the end of Persona, where you see all the people who you maxed out your social link with. So yeah, I think that's kind of all on Resident Evil. It's a game that I really like the idea of, I think is very ambitious, but my final thoughts are this game is best enjoyed by watching someone else play it.
As though it were a movie.
This game is best enjoyed as Resident Evil 4.
I mean, that's a different game. A much better game. Do you have any thoughts, Tyler?
Despite the clunky control, like, the controls were clunky, but somehow I ignored it. I was actually having a lot of fun playing this game.
I beat Dino Crisis 3 for the Xbox. Crappy camera and all. I can deal with crappy controls. This was the worst camera I've ever had to play with.
To be fair, I think if you can get past the way the controls and camera work, this is actually probably going to be a pretty fun game.
Yeah,
I just can't personally.
I think I'm going to actually want to spend more time playing it, but it's not the best game I've ever played, definitely. But it's definitely an interesting game.
It's not the worst game I've ever played, but I'm not saying a whole lot more for it, the praiseworthy side of things.
So speaking of the worst game we ever played, a transition I think I've used a lot recently, we have a list on our website at www.lasttimeonvideogames.com listing all the games we've played. At the top is Chrono Trigger, a game with controls that work just fine. At the bottom is Echo of the Dolphin, a game that's controls could probably use some improvement but aren't really the problem with that game. In the middle is the game we played last week, Kirby's Dream Course.
The game, controls are kind of a problem in that game.
I don't really think so. The physics should have worked better, but the controls are fine.
It really needed a joystick for better control. The D-pad does not really work well for that.
So I thought for a while about where we should start with this, but then I realized there was kind of an obvious place to go, which is The Secret of Monkey Island.
Yeah, that's what I would
have chosen. The one adventure game we've really played. So how do we think it compares to that? I actually like it quite a bit more. I think it's a lot more ambitious. I like the haunted house setting more than the goofy pirate one. I don't think it's successful at horror, but I like a lot of the horror elements to it.
So I guess I actually way prefer the style of game that Monkey Island is, but as a concept, Resident Evil is way better. Like, there's not a whole lot new or interesting going on in Monkey Island. It just has, like, funny dialogue, and I don't know that that's the best medium for conveying that.
Hey, Resident Evil 1's also got lots of funny dialogue.
That's true. It just wasn't intentionally funny.
Which makes it even more funny. I don't have any strong feelings one way or the other, so it sounds like it's going to go above Monkey Island, because that's what both of you guys say.
So yeah. The next game I wanted to compare it to was Castlevania 2 Simon's Quest, because I actually think Resident Evil is similar in that it's a game that I think I would have fun if I played it with a walkthrough open the entire time and just kind of went from point A to point B, but ultimately the controls and camera made me not want to do that. So for that reason, I think it goes below Castlevania 2. But also, I like that game more than maybe anyone on the planet. So what do you guys think?
I mean, I see why you're...
How is Castlevania 2 at 77?
Because I like that game more than anyone on the planet.
I mean, they're both doing a lot of new things and not all of them work, right? You know, at the end of the day, I would have to give it to Resident Evil. I prefer what's going on there to what's going on in Simon's Quest. If only because the puzzles in this are a lot more comprehensible.
I don't think that either one should go in the top 100, but that's me. although I think it's better than Simon's Quest. And the reason for that is kind of what Tyler already mentioned. Simon's Quest has a lot of those elements where it's like, number one, the waiting around for the message to play, and then the puzzles where it's like, okay, you have to go to this specific spot, kneel down, stare at your ass for 5 minutes, and then eventually something's going to happen.
Now you're thinking of Earthbound.
To be fair, they gave you a walkthrough with Earthbound to help deal with that stuff. All right, so I really don't know what to compare it to next. I guess the next ambitious game on the list is Planescape Torment. I don't think any of us think it goes above that, do we?
Planescape Torment is, I guess not fantastic, but a decent enough book. It's not a game I ever want to play, but I think Resident Evil is a worse game experience. It's a worse experience, I think.
So the next game that seems vaguely related because it has guns is Shock Troopers. I don't think it's better than that either.
I like Shock Troopers.
I don't think Shock Troopers is very good, but I think it executes better than Resident Evil.
I don't know. I feel like Resident Evil has so many better ideas than Shock Troopers. Like, let's make it an eight-directional shooter.
Yeah, but Shock Troopers works.
That's true. It is a competent eight-directional shooter.
Shock Troopers is actively fun.
Yeah, and speaking of games that are fun and work, Strider for the Sega Genesis / Arcade is right above Castlevania 2, and I don't think I like Resident Evil as much as Strider.
Strider's a pretty damn good game. So
I guess now Castlevania 2 will be number 78, because number 77 is Resident Evil, which is higher than I expected, but not too high, I don't think. Because I really do genuinely appreciate everything this game was trying to do. I just think, like a lot of early 3D games, it does not hold up.
But you can clearly see its inspiration in more recent things.
Yeah, I think it's a good starting point, honestly. Like I said, I don't think survival horror is a genre, but I feel like I can see why you would want to emulate this, because not only does it seem like it has cool ideas, it seems like it would be easy to improve on as well.
Is Amnesia survival horror? Because it's a game about surviving, and also there's a horror element.
I actually can see a element for survival horror. The problem is a lot of games that are defined as survival horror are action games, and as Yahtzee put it, where the enemies jump very suddenly out of cupboards. It's not so much that, oh my god, I'm so scared, it's, oh my god, that enemy just jumped out of a wall.
And yep. In the case of Resident Evil, I honestly think it's just an adventure game. It's got so much DNA in common with Maniac Mansion and Secret of Monkey Island. It's just also got some action elements to it.
I would probably call Amnesia survival horror. Usually, I'd probably call it the survival horror games just generally horror in general.
Yeah.
Because what's the point of horror? Survival.
Yeah.
I think there is a reverse. We don't see a lot of it, but like the Arkham game Stealth Mode and playing as the killer in Dead by Daylight are also horror games, but those are not about survival. They're about being the murderer.
Yeah, there's stalker horror games.
Yeah, but Predator. I wouldn't call them survival. They're kind of their own thing that they're just kind of coming into play.
Yeah, but they're also horror games. Well, that's my point.
Well, the Arkham game is, it's a stealth game.
Yes.
Because like it's got a lot in common with
like
Splinter Cell. And I guess Thief, but Splinter Cell is the first one I always think of.
So next week we end Spookloween and enter November Thankful Times. So, Tyler, what's the first game we're going to be thankful that we don't have to play for anymore after we record a podcast on it?
So, I'm pretty sure this is the last one on the Genesis, right? Or is it the Master System?
We have two more Master System games to play.
No, sorry, the last Alex Kidd game.
It is.
Specifically. So there are two more Master System games?
So, we have Alex Kidd in Shinobi World and Wonder Boy 3, The Dragon's Trap.
Well, yeah, I'm specifically talking about Alex Kidd games.
No. Alex Kidd, we only have the one more on Master System. And then one on Genesis.
So, I want to get rid of Alex Kidd because, man, these games have been just disappointing. So, I vote we do Alex Kidd in Shinobi World. At least there are cool ninjas.
Shinobi World? That actually sounds like it could be interesting.
I mean, it's better than what? Miracle World? Was that the last one?
That was the first one. The second one is The Lost Stars. It's not even a world.
Yeah, this isn't.
Yeah, Shinobi
just stars.
World? Bitchin'.
Yeah,
it sounds like a lot of fun.
Everyone's a ninja. It's like a Pokemon world, except for ninjas.
Wouldn't it actually be
so
like
it's Naruto.
Naruto?
Yeah.
So, next time on Last Time, Bad Game No Jutsu. This has been a production of Last Time on Video Games. Copyright 2017. All the video games and other media mentioned within are copyright their respective owners. To listen to past episodes and see other content, visit www.lasttimeonvideogames.com.
If you'd like to reach us by email, you can do so at ltovg@lasttimeonvideogames.com. We're also on iTunes and would really appreciate a 5-star review, or if you just told a friend about the show. What is a podcast? A miserable pile of secrets. But this one is over. See you next week.